a Psalm of David.
Hello and welcome to the podcast B-Side with Sarah DeNordwell. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, and Tim Hutchinson.
Yes. Oh, yes. I need to make sure that I pronounce your name correctly because you've been pulling me up on that, haven't you?
Yes, Sarah DeNordwell. That people, if they want to come to the website, can come to it because it's sarahdenordwell.com.
DeNordwell. My South African
I blame that entirely.
does get me down from time to time. And what do we do in the podcast and what do we do in the B-side, Sarah?
Well, in the podcast, we love to encourage people to write by, I read some of my poems and I read listeners' poems who've responded to the writing prompts that we've put in the podcast. And then in the B-side, we dig into some of the themes we've been talking about. And we hope that it gives the listeners more time to write with the writing prompt, because it really is great to get poems, as we have been doing, from England and Ireland now, which is fantastic.
Yes, once again, shout out to our Irish listeners, as this is also broadcast on Radio Maria Ireland, and lovely to be getting poetry in from there as well. So the B-side is a chance for us to look a little bit deeper into some of the poetic themes and writing prompts and creative processes that have been encouraged in previous episodes, mostly specifically the episode just before the one that we're currently, the one that's just come, let's put it that
Which
way.
Which was podcast 13, I think, wasn't it? The one that went out on Palm Sunday. Yeah. And Holy Saturday Streets
Holy
was
Saturday
the name
Streets,
of it.
Yeah. Named after a very wonderful poem. In the podcast. Do you have the poem in front of you if I asked you to read it again at some point?
Yes.
That would be great. Okay, so we might do that. But one of the things I thought would be fun for us to talk about is you had some lovely things to say about the process of creativity. And you described three steps in the process that all begin with R.
Yes, that's true. Well, I was looking back and thinking, how do I go about creating things? And in the classes that I teach in my Write in the Light courses, you know, why does it work that people find the process easier to write in than just when they're on their own and saying, gosh, I really should try and write something? And the process is very simple. It's research, receptivity, and response. And it might be that the response is painting or doing whatever people like to do in their creativity. But the research part is, I think, quite an easy part to get into at first, because it might be just doing what you enjoy, learning what you enjoy learning about. And in my case, it's often just learning about theology. And once I found a particular idea or problem I want to focus on, it's or reading the catechism or whatever, it's doing that work that isn't, you know, what one would necessarily consider creative as such, that actually is a really good soil for then later, when I'm in a more receptive mood, stage two, listening for the line that might be the way in. And then year one has kind of heard that. You've got to respond straight away. I think a lot of people, I think Elizabeth Gilbert did a rather good TED talk on this. You've got to catch this inspiration. It appears to be coming from nowhere, from without. But in fact, it is that mysterious relationship between what you've been reflecting on in this liminal space called your imagination and what then appears as a seeming inspiration. So that was really it. Research, receptivity, response. And I tried it out on some of our children yesterday in Walsingham, because we had a wonderful day of creativity with them and prayer. And I had 26 8 to 18-year-olds in a very small room. Wow. And we managed to do this process, thinking about the resurrection. And they came up with some wonderful stuff. I just broke it down into research, receive, respond. And it was fantastic. They wrote great stuff and drew great pictures too. So shout out to the children of Walsingham.
Hmm. The story that you just mentioned there that had been, was it Elizabeth Gilbert?
Yes, I think it was her,
is
yes.
Is that the one where the poem is running away and then it gets grabbed by the tail and then comes back? And then
yes,
sometimes,
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
When I was listening to this three-stage process, that story came to mind, but I couldn't remember who it was who had said it.
Ah, there
but wasn't
you go.
She referring to another poet, or was it who had...
Well, she also, I can't quite remember, but I knew that she was referring also to her own process, that she'll feel like she's standing there and then suddenly this wind blows. I mean, that's what I remember from it. And she suddenly realizes she has to catch it or the moment will be gone.
Yeah.
And I think that's true often, you know, if it's gone, it's gone, you know, like going to Lidl. But, you know, it has to be captured. It is a sort of a bit evanescent, if you like.
And when you trying to capture ideas so that you don't lose them, do you sometimes, because I know you're notorious for sending voice notes to all your friends, do you ever send voice notes to yourself?
Actually, I do. Yes, I do. I walk down the road leaving voice notes to myself. Okay. Absolutely, I do. And then I email them to myself in case I lose my phone, which is sometimes known to happen. So yeah, it's really, really useful. Because there's a completely different process that happens when you're speaking to when you're writing, I find.
That's true. That's really true. And which one do you prefer? Because I find if I'm going to create something, then writing is actually a better way of doing it than speaking.
Yes. Well, I think they're different. I think the speaking part is part of the process. It's capturing the vague ideas, but the writing is the focused thing. Uh-huh. The writing is the more direct download, I think.
I heard a fascinating thing about G.K. Chesterton the other day.
Oh, yes.
Because he used to dictate, I mean, the speed at which he produced his works was such that he would have them dictated. He would dictate them to his secretaries. And it is said by more than one of his secretaries that he could dictate an essay and be writing a different one at the same time.
That's just unbelievable. It reminds me of St. Hildegard, because she used to write two books at the same time to her secretaries as well. So no, I don't do that. It's enough to remember which bus I'm meant to be getting on and at which stop I'm meant to be getting off.
So, but I almost wonder if that shows that there's different parts of your brain that are busy being enacted in the process of writing and the process of speaking.
Yes, I think actually, if you look into neuroscience and various reports, they do say that, for instance, when you're typing even, and when you're writing, different parts of the brain are lighting up, if that's any indication. I don't know if that's sort of popular science apropos to nothing, but I did hear that.
Yeah.
And it makes sense to me. I don't know, do you type things or do you write them by hand when you're writing songs?
I like writing things by hand.
Yeah, me too, definitely.
And then
I do
sort of a bit more finer work, maybe. I like to change mediums as well. I think that's quite a fun way of sort of getting yourself out of a rut, is to go from one medium to another. So if it's speaking to writing to typing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think that the typing, I often tell people in the workshops, whatever you've written, even if you don't like it, go and type it up, because it's sort of like honoring what you've done, putting it in a more official form. And you'll often find that as you type it, you see things you didn't see before, and looking at it in sort of print, as it were, makes it look different.
Yeah.
And then you can save it in the right folder, and then you think, oh, that actually works here, and this works there, and then you can expand on it and things.
Okay, we're probably spending more time on this than we should, but I'll say one last thing, and that's that I actually enjoy sometimes typing things on a mobile phone. I find that the speed is often conducive to like the way that I want to think about something.
And so you use your voice notes, or what do you use?
No, like typing with my thumbs.
I meant notes function on the phone, writing.
Yeah,
it's yellow on my iPhone.
Yeah, just use the notes function. And apparently C.S. Lewis used to say that he liked to use a quill, which you had to dip every few words in.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he liked it because he said that it corresponded to the way that he thought. So he didn't want a faster method of writing.
It sort of slowed him down a bit. Yeah, I mean, that notes function on my phone, the writing one, has been really useful when something comes to me in one of those receptive moods, sitting in a cafe or sort of sitting at the end of mass or whatever. And then suddenly I remember writing, I was thinking about the theme of narcissistic abuse, and I suddenly thought of this line, one of my favorite themes of last year. And it was something like, and I suddenly thought, putting down the spotlight. I thought, oh, I want to know what that means. So I wrote on my phone, when you put something like, when you take the spotlight off the narcissist, it's you that disappears, because you always were invisible. You just didn't know it. And so I had to write that down in case I forgot it. And it turned out to be a really good poem. So I emailed it to myself, and it has been a favorite for a certain sort of person. So anyway.
That's funny. I want to get back to these three stages, the research, receptivity, and response. And
why has that interested you?
Well, I just think it's nice. So actually, it was something that I wanted to talk to you about a little while ago, where I went to an art gallery in Cambridge, and I had a really fascinating conversation with a lady who was actually looking after an exhibition on behalf of her friend. So it wasn't her work that was on display. And I came into this little cubicle, because it was in like a big studio with the different studios within this warehouse, I should say, rather, were separated in like cubicle kind of style areas. And there were all kinds of different mediums, and it was very fascinating. And there was one that was Chinese art. So they had the calligraphy and also these really beautiful sort of, you know, where you have those thick brush strokes and quite minimalist, often images of like birds and things like that.
I love that. Like Sumi-e ink painting.
See, I don't know much at all about this kind of thing, but okay. I think you get the idea if I describe it. So she was there on behalf of her friend, and she did know she knew quite a bit about it, actually. She was a sculptor, but she also did a bit of this kind of art, and she had worked under, she had apprenticed underneath an artist who was very skilled in this. And she described to me what it was like learning this from a master, and how what you would do is that before you could even dip your brush in the ink, you had a whole little ritual that you had to do.
And
it involved kind of like, sitting in a certain way. I think she was kneeling. You had to kind of breathe in a certain way. And I mean, all the kinds of things that you would probably not be surprised to find in that kind of a more Eastern way of approaching tasks than our kind of chunk, 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 you know, like just get it done sort of mentality. And it really struck me as having a kind of wisdom to it, because not just, I immediately thought of two things. One, my own desire to kind of become a bit more intentional with my creative work, and two, how I approach prayer. And I think if you have a ritual, it just sorts out a lot of the messiness that that often gets in the way of the creative process or the prayer process. But if you have a number of steps that you go through, so that I think is a really fascinating thing, right? And then that's something I wanted to talk to you about, but now you've come with these three things that are kind of the inner workings of creative process: research, receptivity, and response.
Well, that's kind of looking backwards at categories that kind of already exist, and naming them helps me to know where I'm at in the process. But I wanted to say two things about what you said about these official, beautiful Japanese style.
I think they were Chinese, these ones, but they were quite
Japanese,
similar to,
Chinese. Yeah. Well, the culture, the Japanese culture is derived from the Chinese. But if you want to sort of really meditate on a beautiful meditative process, I mean, just watch a video on like, printing, Japanese or Chinese printing, and the process they go through in carving the blocks and then layering color after color. It's just ravishingly beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to say something about a very interesting fact I discovered, because I have a beautiful book on the Japanese tea ceremony, because it is truly fascinating in the way they do flower arranging. It's all such a very different mentality, and it offers this kind of spirituality that's somehow quite beyond understanding. And then, well, to my Western mind, but then I discovered a fascinating thing, that somebody had conjectured that the tea ceremony had developed actually not as early as we thought, but after the Catholics had gone into Japan and they'd seen the Eucharist being celebrated, and that the way it was created in its beauty of form was something that inspired them. So I thought that was very interesting.
Well, that's not a controversial view at all.
Not at all. No, I just thought I'd throw that in there. The book's in the Bard Library. You can borrow it, Tim, for our next session. But I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Because I want to ask you about, this is what interests me. You know, we are now, when we're recording this, we're not recording it. We're doing it live, aren't we? This is, you know, Maundy Thursday. We're about to enter the Triduum. And, you know, what could be more important than, you know, entering into death itself, and then Jesus descending to the dead and then rising to eternal life and taking us all with him. And surely this is the most creative act that's ever been done since the creation.
Yeah.
And in the poem Holy Saturday Streets, I sort of touched on this Adrian von Speyer inspired thought of descending to the dead and what happens there. Because Holy Saturday is hardly celebrated liturgically at all in our culture. And I find that a bit disappointing, having been to Jerusalem, where even within the Latin church, there was an extraordinary liturgy that I attended that was so profound, with these beautiful chants, you know, God is a corpse, you know, it was just,
wow.
And we brought in these lanterns and flowers, and a huge sheet containing the countenance of Christ was brought in ritually and laid over a tomb, and there were 40 prostrations, and it was so embodied, this contemplation of the death of God and Jesus descending to the dead, that I'm really interested to have people write about this over the Triduum, you know, to be inspired by the liturgy itself to respond. So this three-part process, you know, your research is what you're doing, and then the receptivity is how you receive it, and then the response is, let's try and be, as the Japanese are, it's all about getting ready to be spontaneous. The whole point is that you empty yourself of ego so that you can respond with perfect spontaneity. That's, from what I grasp, from what they're talking about, is the idea of it. But I think the liturgy is hopefully a great place to perceive the egoless act, which is the crucifixion.
The egoless act. That's interesting.
Well, that thought came from my aunt, actually, who, when she was young, you know, as people often do, they think, oh, gosh, you know, Christianity, I think I'll just go off to the East. It's far more interesting. And off she went on a 3-month trip around the world and came back 3.5 years later, having done all kinds of interesting things, and looked for the spirituality that she wanted. And she thought, I don't think I found it. So she sort of went back home, went into church, sat down, looked up, and because she said, I went for 3.5 years to look for the egoless act, sat down in a pew and looked up at the crucifix and thought, ah, there's the egoless act. You know, she returned back home, as G.K. Chesterton would say, and discovered that she'd been home all along. I thought that was rather beautiful.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So are you going to do some writing over the Triduum? Just no pressure.
I probably should, yeah. No, but I'm excited about putting these things into practice, I must say, because I think that they have the potential to be quite helpful. I mean, one of the things I wanted to ask you is if you have had like a specific experience that you can share where you immersed yourself in a certain kind of research, or what I liked was when you were describing these three processes, these three stages, research, receptivity, and response, you grouped with research the solving of a problem. Like if you have some kind of tangle that you're trying to get through.
And, oh, yes.
And if you could kind of say, like, share a story, because I the only one that I can think that comes to mind for me is when I had for a brief period of time taught some poor children English. And I mean, poor in the sense that they were poor because they had me as their teacher. And we were...
I loved you.
we had these really awful textbooks. But I found one gem among them, and it was Alfred Lord Tennyson's Ulysses.
Oh, I love that.
And I read it, and I just thought this was the most amazing thing ever. And so I challenged my students to memorize it, and I said that I would do the same. So we had a little kind of competition there. And what was so fascinating was that I found creativity kind of starting to come from that process of immersing myself into this very neglected art of memorizing something.
Oh, yes.
To the point that I actually had a dream where I was reciting poetry in my dream.
Fantastic.
And I'm trying to remember the line because it was really hilarious. This is something like, and now I turn to the gale of thought. Or something. I don't know. It sounded profound at the time.
Things in dreams always seem more interesting at the time.
So I kind of know that if I were to put in the time and do something like that, it would bear fruit.
Well, the thing that you said, okay, is totally based on the story that I was going to tell, which is that very often, and I say this a lot, really, by the way, when I was a teacher, I used to teach Ulysses in the gym with the kids on the gym benches and on the climbing frames. And we used to get them to go, come, my friends, 'tis not too late to seek a newer world, push off. And they used to leap on the ropes. And it was just brilliant. Anyway, immersion, that's what it's all about. So they used to love it. And immersion, immersing yourself in action and words and memory is so important, because those words that are beautiful, beauty is alive. It's a transcendental. If you immerse yourself in good language written by great people, you know, you're going to be enkindled. That's number one. Second, you did the sensible thing of going to sleep, which is receptivity. So example, you wanted a specific example. Yeah, like St. Joseph, it's a great place to meet with the Lord. So I'd have an 8-hour conversation with my friend Sarah Myers. We'd talk all day about how artists can possibly, what's the best way to earn your living? Is it through doing the work you love and just, you know, let come what may? Mm-hmm. Or should we get a proper job and then do our poetry on the side and then just, you know, the usual conversation about, you know, will normal work drain our creativity or will it help it? All of that. So we talked about that all day. And then on the bus home, looking out of the window, not thinking of anything, this scene appeared in my mind. You know, once upon a time, there was a shop with a shop assistant, but no till. And I was like, I need to write this down. So I jumped off the bus, bought a pen, bought a notebook, because foolish me, I didn't have one in my bag, and wrote it down. And that scene you can hear on my CD, Lipstick is a Spiritual Experience, and it's called The Lifestyle Store. And that scene became the key to the door, practically the rest of my life. And various other people have said when they listened to that scene, they made a courageous decision because of that scene. Obviously, they were thinking about those things already, but it became like for them the key to the door. In fact, Sally, who I live with in London with her husband Hamad, when she heard that scene, it answered her question as to whether she should leave the Stock Exchange and go into music ministry. And she heard the scene. She's like, that's it. I'm going to do it. And she got that scene performed at her leaving do.
Wow.
So the thing is that, and another example is, I was reading the Catechism one night, looking up all the things in the back of the Catechism that mentioned the resurrection, and just wrote them all out by hand. There's quite a lot of it.
Yeah.
Went to sleep, woke up in the morning, and had this line in my head, I don't have time to think about the resurrection. Sat down at my desk, because I'm used to writing the second I get up. Mm-hmm. Even in the dark, when the light isn't on, I'll still write. And then I just wrote out the whole poem without correction. And that's the one I'm going to do in the next Bardcast.
That's cool. There's so many cool things to talk about in that. Let's just be aware of the time and get in what we want to say. One, the idea that, and this came up a few times in the last podcast, that when you present a piece of art that you have spent a lot of time in, you're welcoming other people into that experience with you. It wasn't said in those words, but I think you get what I'm saying. Like there was the quote about a shared subconsciousness and a reference to Augustine.
Yeah. Because isn't it an aspect of the soul? What's the word for that, Tim? There's three aspects of the soul. Is it memory, will, memory, and what's the other one? We ought to know. I don't know. Oh, well, here we are. Answers on a postcard, please, from the listeners.
But I think that's one of the things that makes the creative process really quite incredible, is because that you can do all this work of gathering all the kindling, if we want to use that metaphor, and then waiting for the spark to come and then igniting this fire within yourself. And then you can open that up to somebody else who hasn't done all that work necessarily. You know, it can almost be a moment for them to be fast-tracked into the same experience that you've had.
Yeah. Yeah, lovely. Yes, that's true. Well, that's the gift that the artist gives to the world, and that we receive from the great artists of the past, like Tennyson. You know, if I feel a bit low and a bit hopeless about life sometimes, I'll just pick up the last volume of Middlemarch and read the final chapter, and, you know, my heart will sing. This is the gift that we pass from generation to generation by being artists, you know. It's a wonderful thing to do. And the more I encourage people who think they're just ordinary people to write, the more they then have things to give their relatives. I mean, I have a close friend who says she just couldn't speak to her relatives about faith. It was just so anathema to them. And yet when she started writing funny poems and then poems that were a little bit deeper, and gradually she's having these wonderful conversations.
Yeah.
Because it's really, because they love her already. So something that's come from her, they find interesting. And then it connects with them because it feels real.
Mm-hmm. All right. So to wrap this up, what I think we should do is I'm just going to say those three processes again to encourage people to do them. The first
one.
Oh,
and then the writing prompt, I should mention. And then the writing prompt.
Yes, I was going to say that.
Sorry, I know.
So the research is the first process. The receptivity is the second, and the response is the third. So if you are wanting to get into some kind of creative process over the next few weeks, remember those three R's: research, receptivity, and response. Now, Sarah, what is the writing prompt for the current podcast?
And well, it does rather depend a bit on having listened to the poem, Holy Saturday Streets.
Yes, which I think we could probably fit it in if you want to read it now, but you have to be quick.
It's not a quick poem, though. But can they listen to Bardcast 13 already, Tim? If they just put Bardcast 13 Sarah into their podcast app, it'll be there, won't it?
It'll be there by this evening, yeah.
Yeah, great. Okay, super. So then the prompt was to use the same structure, inside me, because the poem begins, inside me are the streets of Jerusalem. And then there was another verse, inside me. And then the third word was within me, which came at the end of that third verse. And after that, it was all about examining something that was really such a strong experience that it was already inside you. And you were just taking a slow, single camera shot view of that whole experience. And anything that you've been really immersed in. And I would love it if people were immersed in the Triduum and perhaps wrote about their experience of these 3 days, because it must bring up a lot of personal sorrow, grief, joy, resurrection. And I don't think we share enough of what our faith does for us. And that would be a great desire of mine, that we would discover more of what God is doing for us by writing about it.
Yeah.
So that was it. Inside me, within me. And then I am sure that people will know when they've got to the end of the sort of chapter. And that was when, shout out to Jackie Garrett, who wrote that beautiful poem, Coming Home. And she's also written a lovely one, Inside Me, that she did in class, which I hope to read as well next Bardcast. So And Tim, I invite you to try as well, because you spend a lot of time facilitating other people, and I'd love to hear more of your songs again.
All right. Challenge accepted.
Excellent.
All right. Tell us about where these poems can be sent, and then that's us for today.
Okay, yes. So please send them to me, Sarah with an H at sarahdenordwall.com. So that's Sarah, DENORDWALL.com. And I'll be absolutely delighted to receive them. And just let me know if you'd be happy to have it read on air. And if you're interested, by the way, in being in a small group and a course, I'm starting the Resurrection course on Tuesday nights. On the 16th of April, and it runs for 5 Tuesdays. So if you'd like to apply to be in that, you can write to me on the same email address.
Wonderful. So that's been the Bardcast B-Side with Sarah de Nordwall and myself, Tim Hutchinson. And it will also be, this will be broadcast on Sunday. So happy Easter to all those who are listening to it on Sunday.
Fantastic. God bless. A Psalm of David. Behold, he neither sleeps nor slumbers, the guardian of Israel.
Israel.